Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, along with
Dave Preston.
He's the resident Moody Blues expert here, but we're here to talk with Justin Hayward, who's coming to the Birchmere on August 22nd. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us, sir.
Oh, great pleasure. Nice to talk to you, Jason and Dave. Yeah, nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. Now, you're on solo tour here once again at the Birchmere this summer after being on tour with the Moody Blues last summer, and of course, big year with Rock Hall and everything too, but what sort of freedom do you feel doing these solo tours as opposed to the band?
I'm able to do a lot of songs that I was never able to do with the band, deeper kind of album cuts that Moody Blues fans will know. Of course, I'm able to do solo things, and I get to do Forever Autumn, that was a big hit for me, and I do the hits with that I had with the Moodies, so that's great as well. But I think I'm playing these songs. I'm really rediscovering these songs for the first time. Like I said, I've not played most of this set. I've never played on stage before, either because they didn't work or just because there was other things, that were in a Moody set. And it's a joy for me. I'm with two wonderful musicians, Mike Dawes, acoustic guitar maestro, and actually we both play acoustic and electric, and Julie Reagan's the most wonderful musician and vocalist that I've ever known, and it's a real joy for me. I hope there's something there for everybody. I think so. And I tell the stories behind the songs and what was happening 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, that kind of stuff.
You remember that far back?
I know I was there in the 60s. I've seen the pictures and I'm in them, but my mind was just elsewhere, chemically and emotionally sometimes.
Justin, Knights in White Satin remains a standard over 50 years later. At what point did you have any idea that it would be more than just the group's next single? Because every song just begins with you putting pen down on paper. At what point did you realize it would be something special that it's become?
It took a few years. Of course, it wasn't the single that was released in America at the time. It was Tuesday Afternoon. Thankfully, because Tuesday Afternoon became a great kind of radio hit, because I think Tuesday fitted the radio format at the time better. But Nights was a very long, slow kind of thing. It had some success for other people, actually, after we'd recorded it. And most notably in France, where other people's France and Italy, where other people's versions of it were hits, but it slowly kind of caught on and just stayed around for ages. And in 1973, we had an album. I think it was called Seven Sojourn, and the record company were desperately trying to sell that record and suppress Nights. And the more they tried to suppress it, the more it just got bigger. And DJs started playing it and getting hold of it, and that's when it finally reached the top of the charts, right when the record company didn't want it to, It's a curious thing. But it's always from the heart, and Mike Pinder and his Mellotron contribution, and his arrangement can never be underestimated. And, I just had the two verses. I came home from a gig one night, wrote the two verses, but it was Mike with his Mellotron that made the sound of it happen.
Now, Knights in White Satin, obviously probably the most iconic, but there were a bunch. Wildest Dreams, Forever Autumn, Tuesday Afternoon, but I'm sure you're asked about all those so many times. Is there a song that you wish you were asked more about, like a hidden gem that in your own mind you were like, that's one of my best damn ones, and no one asked me about it?
There was a song called Watching and Waiting. I actually do it in my solo set, but we've never done it with the Moodies. It just, the Moodies was always kind of two groups. It was the recording group that was recorded in a particular way, with acoustic guitar up front, some spoken word. And then there was the touring group that for many years was like 2,000 watts and loud drums. And sometimes some things just didn't work as you took them between those two shades and personalities. But there was a song called Watching and Waiting that was our first single on our own Threshold label that we put out, and we all believed, and particularly me and Graham and Mike, really believed in it, that this would be the one, you know, and it sold out and came out and sold about 10. My mum bought it in the sum of her pals, and that's about it. But over the years, it's become a favorite, and when I do it on stage now, it's a lovely kind of warm feeling, and I'm very pleased because I've never done it before. After all of these years, that was since 1969, so 50 years later, people really got their heads around it.
During your career, Justin, you've played in all sorts of stadiums, Isle of Wight, all venues of all sizes. What does a club like the Birchmere do for you as a performer? What do you enjoy about that intimate setting?
I love it. I've been there a couple of times before, and it's always a pleasure. I mean, I'm able to tell, in a big situation, you're not able to talk very much, but I love, you know, people are interested in the stories behind the songs, and I tell the stories of the time, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, all the way through, and what was happening at the time, the stories around the songs, how they came about. And, of course, this is the way that I intended these. This is the way I made the demos of all of these songs. This is the way they were at home when I wrote them. And that's what I'm able to present at a place like the Birchmere. And, you know, when we do bigger places, maybe I'll get a bigger outfit. You know, I've been asked to do bigger places, but I don't want to get real loud just yet because I'm enjoying this particular way of doing these songs so much, and the musicians that I'm with and the little crew that I have, the guys, boys and girls that are with me are just so great, and I want to keep this group together.
Awesome. Now, Justin, one of the cool things about you, you are the proverbial triple threat. You know, you're a singer, you're a guitarist, you're also a songwriter. When you sit down and actually go to pen the song as a songwriter, do you find that your inclination is that you're writing it sort of, you know, lyrically to sing, or more are you first thinking writing it for yourself as a guitarist?
It usually comes out. That's a good question, because it's a mystery to me still, and it's a mysterious thing, songwriting. And I'm not sure, I don't know what my life would be like without these songs and without songwriting. It's a kind of place to go. And Picasso said inspiration has to find you working. So I find if I go into my room and actually devote time to it, something magical will happen. It's just that I'm so lazy, you know, that I don't do it a lot of the time. But usually, yes, it'll come out of a guitar rhythm that'll suggest something, and it'll spark some kind of, I know it sounds pretentious, but it sparks some kind of cinematic experience in your mind, and suddenly it reveals itself in a kind of pictorial way, and in a landscape, and either at the keyboard or the guitar, that'll reveal itself and lead you through it. You just need to kind of make that first step into that landscape, and then it reveals itself.
We're speaking with Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues on tour this summer, Birchmere, Wednesday, August 22nd. Congratulations, Justin, on getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this past year. What did you take away from the whole induction experience this past spring?
Well, you know, I'm so pleased for the Moody Blues fans. It's validated the music that they love. And to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, they created a temple to the kind of everything that's turned me on ever since I was a little kid. And so that's great. The experience itself, we were in our little presentation, we were quite ordered, and we talked about, you know, let's be concise, clear, and do it properly and just do our thing. And that's it. Some people, man, they went on for like 45 minutes, and somebody was standing in there, and then in 1982, I did that. I thought, oh my God, you know. And we looked at each other and said, he's only got to 1982. So it's like a lot of these Hall of Fame things you see with the football players as well. You know, they take an opportunity to ramble on for hours. But it was extremely long, but I certainly enjoyed our bit, but and it's a great pleasure. I live in Europe, so I have to explain it to people there, you know, what it is.
Yeah, but it's they didn't get the memo. Ramble On was a different group. But you've been with you've been with the Moody Blues over 50 years. But seriously, most groups are lucky to last 50 months, if not 50 days sometimes. What's been the key for you, John Lodge, Graham Edge, just continuing this journey together for five freaking decades?
I think it's because we were never kind of celebrities or, we didn't even have a publicist in the early days. And I don't think we smiled in a photograph until, or nobody told us to smile in a photograph until about 1978. And I think we just went our own way, that's all, and did our own thing. And I've been lucky as a writer and as a performer to never have, to have always been with labels that have just said to me, just do what you want, it's just fine by us. And it's stood or fallen by that rule, really. We just went our own way, and we were very lucky. That's turned out to be the best thing we could have done.
One of the unheralded figures in the history of the Moody Blues, former producer, the late Peter Knight. I can imagine with five guys writing and all the personalities going from concept to concept album, for him it was almost like herding cats, trying to get everything in gear. What was the process like going from concept to concept album? Because when you look at the albums, especially, everyone talks about the core seven, the whole was really greater than the sum of the parts of the individual songs, Justin.
That's right. I think I think that Peter was on the first album, and then he became a family friend of mine, and then we went on to do other things together, which were wonderful. And I think there was never a problem. Sometimes the theme of the album came later, and it came after after the music had been recorded, and then you put something together. Sometimes Graham Edge's spoken word things would come first, and he would suggest an idea which would spark the rest of us. So it usually came like that, and then everything sort of came together. Sometimes it was even Phil Travers in the sleeve that he would start working on some ideas after listening to, he would listen to my demos and stuff like that, and then he would start working on something, and sometimes his sleeve would spark it. It was an interesting process. It was never the same twice. But I do say that Graham and his spoken word things had a lot to do with it.
Awesome. Well, you've been more than generous with your time, and we can't wait to see you out at the Birchmere on August 22nd. Thanks so much for joining us, Justin. We covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time, so thank you.
Jason, thank you. Thank you, Dave, as well. Lovely to talk to you. My love to you, and look forward to seeing everybody in Alexandria.
Lovely to talk to you again, my friend.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.